Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's April 29th. 39 degrees and sunshine here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Adam Carroll. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. And I got to tell you, what a day so far we are having, even though we're only at 8 a.m. It is lots of sunshine. 62 will be that high temperature in Park City. And you know what? We're going to go to 70 tomorrow just because Mother Nature wants to give us some nice weather here over the next couple of days. And it will be, again, another fairly sunny day, at least to start. We might see a little bit of cloud cover here later in the afternoon tomorrow, but more or less a mostly sunny start to a partly cloudy finish. We'll keep the clouds around here heading into Saturday, but it'll be mostly cloudy than anything else. It'll be a cloud storm, so we really won't see much in the way of any wet weather until maybe Sunday, but still yet around 70 degrees for the high on Saturday. 55 is going to be the high temperature Sunday as we start cooling things off. As a front comes through, that will bring us some breezy conditions to go with it, but overall there is a chance of some showers to go with that front. About a 40% chance that we'll see some showers here in the Park City area. Then we'll cool off to the low 50s by Monday and then start warming right back up behind it. And there is still a chance on Monday and Tuesday that we might see a passing shower or so, especially in the high terrain. But, you know, now that we're getting into May, this is still a pretty wet month. Historically, we need to keep that going. I will say that the long term doesn't look great. At least we got that rain this week, because now that we're warming up and drying out, it just leads to higher fire danger yet again.
Okay, Adam, thank you.
You bet.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'm scheduled to talk with Summit County Council member Doug Clyde with a recap of yesterday's meeting. Then the general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lures, with information on some upcoming wastewater projects happening this spring and summer. Finally, Trails and Open Space Program Manager for Park City Municipal, Heinrich Dieters, with an update on the latest with the walkability bonding and the trailhead to transit plans. Stay tuned. Taking a look at some local news now. City Council in Park City will return to regular session today with a packed agenda. KPCW's Sean Higgins has some of the highlights.
Thursday's meeting will be held electronically over Zoom and Facebook Live. Council will kick off the meeting with a work session starting at 3:30. First on the agenda is the 4th of July festivities in Park City and what they may or may not look like. At the last council meeting earlier in April, council indicated a willingness to reduce the size of gatherings in the city if at all possible. Options at the city's disposal are limited, however, after state legislation passed earlier this year will prevent the city from enforcing any pandemic-related health orders by the 4th of July. City Manager Matt Dias said the council will be weighing a number of options, including the possibility of holding the parade on an alternate date, perhaps a Friday in order to reduce drive traffic over the weekend, as well as exploring date and location changes for the fireworks display. Ultimately, Dias said the city is looking for the public to weigh in and give the council their thoughts before any final decisions are made.
We're absolutely trying to shoot at a moving target. The 4th of July is relatively unique in that the city is actually the applicant, the promoter, and the regulator. And we have a long and wonderful tradition in our community. And if you've been in Park City for more than a few years, this is something that neighbors look forward to, longtime locals, visitors. But like most things, it's grown. And perhaps it's grown in some areas that overwhelms us at times. And so, we obviously have the opportunity to run the same type of 4th of July festivities that we have for several years, or we could scale back. There's a lot of different levers that we could pull, and really we need to hear from the public and get some feedback.
Park City's proposed Arts and Culture District is also back on the agenda as an item in the work session. On Thursday, the financial plan and scope of the project will be discussed. Earlier in April, city staff disclosed that if the council were to greenlight the project in its current form and price tag of $107 million, the city would effectively be prevented from pursuing any other significant projects like affordable housing or open space purchases for the next 10 years. Deputy City Manager David Everett, who is the city's point person for the district, said he hears from council members that they are not willing to give that much up over the next decade.
I've definitely gotten feedback, particularly from council members, that they're not prepared to do that. And completely get that, completely respect that. And as a result, we've been working on the finance side to figure out ways to basically scale down what could be the budget. And to do that, we've been looking on the scoping side at what can we do to reduce costs overall for the project? What can we do, particularly on the housing side, to bring down that per unit cost? And what can we do to really ensure that there's flexibility moving forward for the council so that if they did commit to a certain scenario, there might be options for build out in the future that preserve, you know, preserve the ability to adapt in the future.
No final decision on either the 4th of July or the Arts and Culture District are scheduled to be made on Thursday. Other items on the agenda include a resolution acknowledging the legacy of Adolph's Restaurant, a Park City staple since the 1970s, which is set to close for good at the end of the month, and considerations to allow the city's public bodies to continue holding electronic meetings and to approve the supplemental plans for this summer's Park City Sunday Market on Main Street. Thursday's meeting is scheduled to begin at 3:30 p.m. The full meeting agenda and details on how to participate can be found through links on our website, kpcw.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap, I have Councilmember Doug Clyde. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see. The council on Monday took a site visit to the to Cherry Canyon on the East Wanship Bench to have a look at the 30-lot Trail Ridge subdivision. It's on some 337 acres. Last year, the Eastern Summit County Sewer Advisory Committee was looking at the plan there for the proposed large underground wastewater system. So is this now coming to the council for final approval?
Yes, and we were just simply taking a site visit so that we could look at the land and consider the full impacts of the development and how it should properly be mitigated.
Okay, so were all of your questions then answered? I mean,
I think largely I believe they still have some work to do on wildfire mitigation, looped access, just basic public health and safety issues. Not that they aren't working on those issues. They understand that there are issues and they're working on them, but we probably gave them some direction that indicated they need to do more.
Okay. So this comes back to you when? Do you know?
I don't have our schedule in front of me. Sorry, I can't tell you right off the top.
All right. Any news in out of the regular meeting from the Weed Control Advisory Board presentation?
We've got a great department, first of all, with some incredibly skilled people. We are using all available appropriate control measures, including working a lot on biological controls. Biological controls don't necessarily eradicate weeds, but they keep them down to a manageable level. And to the extent that you can do that with insects, that's great. But other than that, I think it was just a positive report.
All right. And then council also got an update regarding the Weber Watershed Community Collaborative effort. There was a request here for a full-time project manager. Is that something that the council approved, or is that part of the budget process?
Well, it ultimately becomes a budget issue, but I know that my direction was pretty clear, and I think that most of my fellow council people were clear on it as well, that this is a position that speaks to the most critical items in our overall watershed and land management tasks right now. And not only do they have to do with our own drinking water, right, because that's where our drinking water comes from, but we're responsible for the quality of water for, roughly a million people downstream. And if we screw up this watershed, we are going to pay for that for decades, and there will be a major impact on health and safety.
So what was your direction then to this?
Direction was to let's get somebody on board, irrespective. We've got to figure out how to make them fit into our budget. If there are CARES Act fundings that can contribute to this, that's great. But nonetheless, we want to see a resource manager, if you will, in the county.
Sure. And then when you say that we could be financially responsible for any problems, I mean, such as?
Yeah, the federal law on this is that, based on the Clean Water Act, is that you're responsible for the quality of the water that leaves your boundary, right? And you don't get to screw up other people's water. That's kind of fundamental sort of health and safety issue. And we have an extreme responsibility because we're high in the watershed. Right, so we theoretically have to deliver water out of our boundary that is essentially of the highest quality, and that is our obligation legally, and it becomes our obligation financially if we can't do it. If our land use screws that up, that's our problem.
Yeah. Also, there was a presentation or just kind of a discussion about bringing the plans to bring back county government back to in-person services. Did council have any suggestions for staff there?
Oh, yeah, and I think that staff has presented us with a good plan that that makes sense. We don't need to blow the whistle tomorrow and say everybody back to work. That's not realistic. People have been working at home, for over a year now. We've changed people's responsibilities. We've moved them around. We've done all kinds of things to make this as efficient as possible. And now we need to unwind those portions of it that make sense, but we may also leave part of it wound, if you will. That is to say that people can continue to work from home. And we've developed new policies to guide that so that we are confident that we're getting the performance that we need.
And then what about the county meeting spaces? I mean, when will they be reopened? We're talking about like the Ledges Event Center and the conference room spaces there at the services building and the courthouse.
Yeah, I'm off the top of my head, I don't have that number in front of me, but I know, for example, libraries, I believe, are opening on May 5th. I would guess that those are similar targets for those sort of functions.
All right. And then did the council support the merit pay raises and cost of living increases for county employees?
Well, there was, first of all, generally, yes. I think there's no question about that. I think there was concern about how much is given to cost of living versus how much is given to merit. I think there's broad conclusion, I believe broad agreement that cost of living is something that we have to keep up on. You know, that's a compounding problem, obviously. If you don't give a cost of living this raise this year, then when you go to give your 2% next year, you're behind the curve. And, the county is not, there's no intention of the county trying to be the highest payer employer by any means. We realize that our employees make decisions about where they work, and we hope to continue to be a place that provides them with the sort of work environment that they want and the sort of job security that they want and the benefits they want, and to do so at a reasonable cost. But that all comes down with, at a minimum, we got to keep up the COLA, the cost of living. And so then we're going to get some further data from staff about, okay, here's what the cost of living is going to look like based on what we discussed, and then here's what the range of merit raises might look. So we'll revisit that, but it's in process.
All right. Council also got an update on the agreement for the Community Renewable Energy Program. Have all of those 8 interested anchor communities signed on to this?
Well, I don't believe anybody has signed the document, but certainly all of those 8 municipalities have demonstrated or shown their intent clearly. That's 8 out of about 30, and we would expect some of the others to join as well once they become a little more familiar with it. But the big players are Salt Lake City and a handful of other cities and counties, and assuming things go as planned, I think we're comfortable that that's going to happen.
All right. So when will that be ready to go?
Well, it's a document in draft form that has a signature page on it. So, you know, it is. And first of all, we don't get to edit it anymore. There have been more lawyers working on this than there are people in Park City. So we're not trying to argue with them. We're just indicating that we support the project and are hopeful that others has anticipated well and that this is going to move forward.
All right. So anything else there on the agenda that you wanted to make note of?
Well, I've talked your ear off here. We had an item on a storage unit that is proposed on the road into Camas, but it's not consistent with zoning. It's requiring a rezone, and the issue about that is that when we went through the very long rewrite of the general plan, which I was involved in every inch of, took about 6 years. The purpose was not to trash the entry corridors into our cities with a bunch of scattered development, random commercial. And so one of the first things we do after we pass the zoning is we come back with some scattered development and random commercial to go on the entryway to Camas. And, you know, I think irrespective of whether you live over here or not, it's not the entryway that we have envisioned. So I don't know why we're here and why we're proposing to give this person development rights in what I would consider to be simply a spot zoning exercise. So it is to say we're giving them development rights that are, first of all, above and beyond what they need for quiet enjoyment of their property. They have that now currently. And we're doing so, I believe, to the detriment of the county. And I just think that, you know, that not thoroughly investigating or following our thoughts in the general plan is not appropriate. We need to go back and understand what it was we were trying to accomplish and why we didn't put commercial. We were asked by many people during that process, none the least of which is the Blazards, who owns a big chunk of land outside of Camas. They said, rezone is commercial. We're commercial. We deserve to be rezoned commercial. And we said, no, you know, we've kind of talked to the cities and towns, and they want to have a say in what goes on in their boundaries, and we want them to be successful. And so random acts of zoning are not a road to success.
All right. Any word from those who want to give public input on the 200-plus avalanche gates that are set to be installed in above homes at the Colony?
Yeah, the complexity of that is that that permit was issued some time ago. You know, there are a lot of things when you go back into the history of the Colony that were essentially granted as low impact and or matters of right. You know, do you get to put a ski lift in? Well, it's not clearly a matter of right, but with a little bit of mitigation, yes, that would be a low impact permit. You know, do you get to put snowmaking in? Well, it's a ski area. We would expect to see snowmaking. So here they have a situation where they have some roads and maybe some structures, I'm not certain, which are threatened by an avalanche path that is all on private ground. It's outside, I believe it's outside of the boundaries to the ski area. And they have proposed these defensive structures. Apparently it's an obligation that was made decades ago. And Vail is now putting them in. But the permit was granted a year ago. It's kind of like a building permit. You know, if you zone something residential, then you would expect somebody to have a residential building permit approved. If you zone something as a ski area and it's full of avalanche terrain and it's full of trees and hazards and rocks and all the rest of that stuff, then I think you can expect the ski area to respond with what is, you know, essentially normal and routine practices. And it is very hard for us to tell them that they don't get to operate their ski area in what we they consider to be a safe manner. I think that's beyond our scope.
Well, it usually is part of your scope, though. I mean, when perhaps wildlife routes are there, when view corridors are considered, and I think that's what some of the members of the public feel like they didn't get a chance to comment on.
Well, sure, and as I mentioned to one of the callers at the time, you know, we probably have 100 of all permits that can be appealable. I suspect we do 100 a month. You know, every building permit is appealable, every driveway permit is appealable, everybody's barn is appealable. Every one of those permits can be appealable. To manage government and move forward in a reasonable way, you have to decide what you are going to allow and what you're not going to allow. And, for example, we allow a person to go in and pull a building permit for a single-family residence on a single-family lot. Well, 30 years ago, whenever they did the canyons, they looked at it and they said, well, that's just a normal routine part of skiing. Largely, we would be hard-pressed to go in there and say, well, we don't care what your goal is, and we don't care whether you meet your safety requirements. We just want this to be different. I don't think that that is consistent with our previous agreements. Would we do things differently now? I don't know. But the problem we always have when we're dealing with our ski resorts here in Summit County is that these ski resorts are on private land. And that is a very, very different expectation than what most people have for most ski resorts, because most ski resorts in the United States have some very large public land component. And when you start managing a ski resort on public land, then those considerations become very high. That is to say, you know, if you want to deal with the aesthetics of avalanche control nets, well, you can say, look, this is public land. That's a different scenario. If we grant somebody a right to operate a ski area, I'm not going to get involved in how they load their chairs.
Yeah. So, bottom line, you're telling me that it's really too late to do anything on this one.
Well, but first of all, yes. The time has kind of come and gone. Will we be talking about these in the future? Could there be new regulations? All of those are possibilities. But again, you know, we try to stay out of the day-to-day operations of businesses.
Okay. Hey, I had one more question I had for you. The council hosted a webinar on Tuesday with the Board of High Valley Transit, specifically
right,
talking about the Silver Springs Transit. Did you get a good turnout for the 1 o'clock meeting?
You know, that was an odd one. It wasn't publicly noticed, so I got on the meeting and was informed that it wasn't publicly noticed, and so I left the meeting. But my general understanding was that it was reasonably well attended, that we were able to communicate clearly with a number of people and move things along. So I you know, we're a long ways away from being able to clearly explain what our new bus system is going to look like to the satisfaction of all those people whose routes are changing. And I understand that's a big concern. But we've hired professionals, we have professionals who work for us, and they believe that we will be more effective in transportation going forward.
Okay, so, well, there's been certainly a lot of criticisms that the Silver Springs bus is being pulled out of the neighborhood.
Sure.
Are we?
And part of that, Leslie, is just simply a misnomer in a sense. That is to say, you know, had we said in our narrative the pink line will be replaced by, then people would be looking at the replacement and saying, is this going to help us? Instead, unfortunately, we said, you know, the following bus lines will be eliminated, the following bus lines will be modified, blah, blah, blah. And so now people think that if the pink is going away, then they have no transportation. The answer is, in reality, they probably have better transportation.
Okay. Hey, Doug, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
That's Summit County Councilmember Doug Clyde. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We've got a conversation with Mike Lors from Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District next. KPCW News Time now 8:32. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. A wastewater rehabilitation project taking place this spring and summer. And in the studio to tell us what to expect, I have the director of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lors. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So is it just one project in two phases? Is that what we're talking about?
Actually, this is a continuation of a multi-year project to line a very large sewer line that starts at the intersection of 224 to 248 and goes all the way to our Silver Creek Water Reclamation Facility. It's over 7 miles long, and the total cost of putting a liner inside this existing pipe is between $11 and $12 million.
Okay, so where what have we finished and what's left?
What we have left for this year is a section down the middle of 248, and that's what I'm here to talk about today. And then this summer, we'll be doing a large section east of Highway 40.
Okay.
That won't impact the public out in that area.
Okay. Well, you've been able to do this, the work so far, though, without a lot of impacts, haven't you?
We have. We did a section of 248 last year. Most of that was off of the pavement, meaning north of the road. This coming phase involves dealing with a section of pipe that's right down the middle of 248, and it's going to be disruptive for a period of time. The good news is that we're using an advanced technology where we put a liner inside the existing pipe, and we will not need to dig up the road and shut the road down for weeks on end or even months on end. So the good news is we'll be in and out of there, but it will be disruptive while we're doing it. The first phase will be started tomorrow. It will start at the intersection of 224 and 248 and go to the high school. This is where we will be pumping wastewater out of the existing pipe to an above-ground temporary pipe, and then that wastewater flow through that temporary pipe downstream. And what that allows us to do is get to a section of pipe without wastewater in it and be able to install a liner. But that temporary pipe, the pumps, all the personnel that it takes to do all that will be in the middle of the road. And because of that, we'll be doing the work from 7 p.m. until 6 a.m. starting tomorrow. And we'll have that completed by June the 4th.
Okay. So the sewer pipe, or the temporary one, stays in the middle of the road through this process?
It will be moved down as we complete a section of pipe. So it's like 500 feet at a time. So that temporary pipe and the pumps associated with it will move down the pipe as we complete each section.
Okay. Any concern about cars hitting it, damaging it?
Well, it'll all be traffic controlled. We'll be shutting the road down to one lane each direction from 7 p.m. till 6 a.m. The good news is that during the daytime, we will not be doing any work. The road will not be shut down except for some minor situations. And the second phase, which will start on June the 7th and be completed by July the 30th, involves a section of pipe from the high school down to the middle school. And that's mostly north of the road, off the pavement. So that will be done during the daytime, and there should be much less disruption. But this first phase, again, starting tomorrow from 224 intersection down to the high school, will be disruptive from 7 p.m. till 6 a.m.
Okay. And is that then done?
That then will be out of 248. The summer will you have a large section off of and east of Highway 40, but that will not impact the public.
Okay. And then is the next year then, is that you finish it up or?
This should wrap up this particular line. I will tell you that we do have other projects that use the same technique. And I might mention we do have a project set up for Park Avenue later this summer, and I can give you the details at that time. But that'll be starting in July and go through August. And we have a section of Park Avenue that we'll need to shut down as well.
Okay. And I think the goal is to actually get 248 paved by UDOT sometime this summer, so that's kind of your deadline?
That's correct. We're wanting to get in and get out of there before they start paving, and that's the reason we have a drop-dead completion date by June the 4th.
Okay. Let's talk briefly about the statewide drought that we're hearing so many reports on. Is this impacting the Reclamation District at all?
It's not impacting us directly. As you well know, our wastewater reclamation facilities are advanced facilities, and we have had to deal with low stream flows for many, many years now, especially during the dry summer months. Thus, the level of treatment that we provide takes into consideration very low stream flows. Matter of fact, our Silver Creek facility, which we just completed, has a permit that assumes the creek is absolutely bone dry above us. So there's absolutely no dilution. So the water that we put out has to be clean enough to prevent maintain a fish population, and we have all that built into our planning. But statewide, it's a very serious situation, and you'll see many, many projects throughout the western United States where they're going to start using treated wastewater for not only irrigation purposes but also for drinking water.
Yeah, and we've kind of made that happen, though, haven't we, here in the city, with a gray line for golf courses and stuff?
Well, here in the Snyderville Basin, Park City area, currently treated wastewater is not used directly for golf course or other irrigation purposes. But I can tell you we've had many conversations recently on those subjects, because the situation's getting worse. And if we have a severe climate issue in the next couple of years, it's going to be just a reality to where treated wastewater becomes just part of the water system.
Okay. And quickly, where do things stand with the upgrade to the East Canyon treatment plant?
A great question. We initiated design of an expansion for the Jeremy Ranch facility 2 months ago. It'll take 18 months to design, and then we'll bid it out and do all the permitting, and it'll take around three and a half years to build. So this project will entail about 6 years and cost somewhere between $80 to $100 million.
And again, that gets paid for through impact fees? And
this project is being built strictly to handle the new growth and will be paid for almost exclusively by new growth through impact fees.
Yeah. And then also, any news with regard to those COVID studies that were being done on wastewater? Are those completed? Or
no, we're continuing to collect samples where the genetic material for the SARS-CoV-2 virus is extracted. That'll be continued all the way through July.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's it, Leslie.
Okay. Mike, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
That's the general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lures. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.
Hi, it's Francis Lamb. And this week, forget 30-minute meals. It's all about cooking projects. We're talking smoky paellas cooked on the grill. We find out what it's like being a barbecue pitmaster and why you might want to build an oven. It's cooking that'll change your whole weekend and maybe your life. That's The Splendid Table from APM American Public Media.
The Splendid Table, heard here every Sunday morning starting at 9 a.m.
KPCW News Time now, 8:41. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio with an update on a couple of projects, I've got Park City Trails and Open Space Manager Heinrich Dieters. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start first with the 2007 walkability bond. Back then set aside about $4 million to address this area. We have been calling Dan's to Jan's corridor, which is basically from the Park City Market and the Snow Creek Shopping Center there to connect with the Jan's and Colesport intersection there at Deer Valley Drive, Empire, and Park Avenue. Where it is that actually those funds have grown to $5 million, do we know? I mean, is that just money in the bank?
I think that's I probably am not the right person to answer that. That'd be like a budget question. But I think the number's always been right around $5 million. And so, you're correct. That was allocated to that Danza Jans area. What I can tell you is that I'm very excited about is the remainder of that stretch. So from the Fresh Market to the Yarrow and then kind of around the corner, I did a project oh God, Leslie, it's 2016 or something like that. It seems like time flies, where we did the entire west side and we did a lot of the east side from, say, Jan's to Fresh Market. And so Fresh Market and Yarrow is a little bit more difficult, some easement issues and some curb cuts and stuff like that. But that project's moving forward this summer. So really excited about that, because it's been a disappointment that, you know, you have a nice 10-foot wide sidewalk there for a while, and then when you get to that transit stop right there on the east side, it's back down to that 4 foot. So that's a project that's going to be moving forward this year.
Okay, and does that then take the rest of the $4 million?
No, not at all. So the discussion associated with that's going to happen on May 13th. So the project leads on that is John Robertson, our new city engineer, and Julia Collins with transportation planning. Obviously, sustainability, walkability, we're obviously still involved in that, and we're happy to be involved in it. So, but we're looking at, you know, sort of a similar scope associated with that. I don't want to get too far in front of the reporter for council. But the important aspect is Dance to Jans has kind of expanded a little bit down Kearns. Obviously, arts and culture is taking. And so we're re-looking at some of the improvements. But, you know, it's also going to be an opportunity to have council provide some input, the public provide some input. So I think the project list is still very consistent with that Dan's to Jan's and those remaining, like one or two remaining projects that were on that list. But it's also an opportunity to look at, you know, possibly some of those areas in town that could use a little help. So public discussion, council gets to weigh in. They're going to give some recommendations, but you know, for the $4 to $5 million that's remaining, I think it's a great opportunity to have that discussion with the community.
Yeah, I think that the bulk of that money, though, was to provide some kind of safe crossing, either underground, overground, something. And so are those, and then I think you got into the street and it was like, there's no way we can do this. There's so many utilities in the way. So has that project been abandoned?
So I think you hit them all and voiced them very well. So very difficult projects, but I don't think it's been abandoned. I think one of the key components is still trying to connect that regional network, and in that case it's the McLeod Creek Trail system, to you know, the commercial district. So that's not only like you know, where A-Fresh is, et cetera, but it's how it ties into Poison Creek. That's always been a troublesome spot for us. It's a troublesome spot for traffic, right? There's tons of, well, Mike was just here. So I know there's a huge sewer line that goes through, there's water lines. So, you know, these big projects are not easy, and especially when you need like easements, et cetera, from private properties. So I still think that is a high, high focus area, and I still think that that project would weigh or rank very high, some sort of safe crossing there. But, you know, on the 13th, we're going to have that discussion and let council weigh in.
Okay. Because, I mean, there's been some talk about, as you kind of mentioned, the Arts and Culture District. The voters did not approve that money for the Arts and Culture District. They approved it for safe crossing and pedestrian and cycling crossings. So could you really legally use any of that money for arts and culture?
Well, I think that discussion might be had on the 13th, so I'd be, you know, I'd be remiss to comment on that. But I would also say, you know, when we did the walkability bond, and I'm going to get this wrong, Leslie, so you'll have to remind me, but, you know, that was a district that had a name. I always forget the NOMAs, the BOPAs, the whatever. I think it was BOPA, right, that was owned by Mr. Fisher. You know, a lot has changed at that point. So I always think it's good to look into new things, but I also think it's very important that we maintain, you know, the public process that we went through for that walkability bonding and stuff, and the values that were set forth associated with that. And I think this report will do that.
Okay. Again, that's May 13th.
That's what it's scheduled for tentatively.
Yeah. All right. You're also working on what's being called the Trailheads to Transit project. I know some concern was expressed to me that the city may be closing the parking on top of China Bridge in order to run shuttles to Bonanza Flat?
Well, if you can I take a few minutes just to give a real quick on Bonanza Flat, because I think, you know, it weighs into it. So I just wanted to give a, this winter was really successful, I think. It wasn't successful down low, and that was, you know, with the snow levels in Round Valley. But I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, we were able to do some grooming up on Bonanza Flat, and we even did some fat bike grooming. And you know, it was hugely successful, and I credit Mountain Trails and my team, Logan, you know, to pivot and provide that opportunity. It was somewhat similar during COVID. You know, we did everything that we could to provide recreational opportunities for people because that was a safe outlet. But, you know, that's one thing. And then looking forward, you know, we've got a couple programs that I think tie into this Trails to Transit aspect. And one is I have been trying to get sort of open space rangers, if you will, for some time, trails rangers. And these are similar to the basin, you know, and the programs that they're running. An educational outreach, you know, a presence that's at our trailheads, et cetera, to explain the ordinances or the rules or the conservation prohibitions, but also, and importantly so, provide possibly some parking enforcement. And so, you know, our trouble spots are Iron Mountain, Iron Canyon Trail, and Bonanza Flat. And as you know, Bonanza Flat is in Wasatch County. And so we've been working closely with Sheriff Rigby and Wasatch County, and we're hopefully moving towards an agreement where we can provide some additional resources from education and enforcement for specifically for parking up there, because it has been an area that, you know, it fills up early in the morning. And, you know, most people go up there, say 7:30, 8 in the morning. I don't know how often you go up there, but by 8 in the morning, it is full, like the parking lots are full. And so trying to provide a little bit more guidance and enforcement up there so the area isn't, quote unquote, loved to death and there aren't the safety aspects associated with that. So, you know, that's a big component of, you know, how we are looking at handling, you know, the impacts. And it's not only from COVID. I don't think it's going to go away, Leslie. And I'm looking at you right now. I don't think you believe it's going to go away either. We saw a 270% increase in trails and parks issues. And this was, we follow Google Trends somewhat just to kind of see what's going on. We have trail counters out. And, you know, it was tremendous last year. And I honestly don't think that's going away. So how can we address that? Well, we can address it through education. We can address it through enforcement. But a program that with the basin and mountain trails that we've been looking at is some sort of transit opportunity. And any way that we can advance transit options or, you know, in short, provide opportunities for people so they don't have to drive their car and especially drive their car, you know, that far up the mountain is a real goal for us. So, you know, we think that it fits, you know, sort of hand in glove. That said, that's not a program that's funded. And, you know, we had a grant opportunity came up about 3 weeks ago with Utah Open Lands. And so we're seeking some, you know, minor grants to possibly look into a pilot program. And I get a little excited. Those people who know me, you know, I made a mention in a meeting that we were looking at possibly China Bridge as an option to like possibly run shuttles up to it in a pilot program. And so, you know, the important aspect is, I think I got in front of myself and I look forward to Allison Butts and I have chatted a couple times, you know, coming back to HPCA and having a discussion on certain aspects associated with it. But another component of that is looking at the economic development side. So, you know, wherever from a transit perspective, we do this in a lot of our planning, like around resorts, where there's restrooms or there's commercial or something like that. If we can have people go to those areas and not to neighborhoods, if you will, or parking on streets, say along Big Cottonwood or something like that, that's a much better user experience, we think, and it's safer. So, you know, right or wrong, the concept was, can we use Old Town, you know, as an area where people can come to, they can dine, they can go to the bars or whatever, either before or after, and then go to the trails and come down and use transit. So, you know, the point being, though, I probably got too far out in front of my skis, and, you know, to look at how that might impact the China Bridge parking is important. And I think, you know, we are looking at, you know, the adjacent surface lots and everything in town. So, you know, my bad, mea culpa, I probably got a little bit ahead of myself. But again, it's not a program that's funded. It's not something that we would even look to implement until July. So, you know, I look forward to that discussion.
Yeah. So are we talking, though, year-round shuttles, or are we just talking summer?
So, right, all TBD. These are things that aren't funded, but I think the project in itself or the concept has a lot of merit. You know, council speaks about, we hear from the community, like, how do we reduce the impacts in neighborhoods that they're overcrowded, the parking issues, you know, our environmental goals. So this is something that we need to look at, but we need to start small, and that's what this pilot project was You know, the trails, Bloods Lake is open, but, you know, a lot of the trails in Bonanza aren't even open until July 1st. And really, there's snow up there, you know, for some of our conservation goals. So the idea was to run it, you know, in the July sort of time frame through September. That's when we see it. We see our peak trailhead use early in the morning, but then it tapers off in sort of 1 or 2 o'clock associated with that. And, you know, my this is where I got too far out in front of myself. You know, I've worked at MARSAC for 14 years. The top of the China Bridge on that south end looks pretty open at those times. But and we've looked at the parking data. But again, that's a discussion that needs to be had, like, publicly with the HPCA. You know, and I look forward to that. But I think it has value. But I also think we need to look at the other surface lots and stuff as well.
So any time scheduled before council on this then?
It isn't weed. I don't even know what the funding timeline is, to tell you to the truth, Leslie. This was an opportunity that came up. Obviously excited that the basin has a program that I think they're moving forward. I'm a little bit jealous, I would admit, working with Dana and Matt out at the basin. It's something that we want to move forward. But it's really too early to say what sort of the numbers are, the metrics, the logistics and stuff.
Okay. So at this point, that's nothing's a done deal.
Right. Absolutely. I hope it moves forward. And I again, look forward to, like, having that discussion with HPCA.
Okay. Anything else, Heinrich, you wanted to mention?
I do. I want to take one moment and I want to congratulate Laura Smith on her new position. And I want to thank Charlie Sturgis. And I know he's not leaving until June, but, you know, Charlie, Rick, and Laura. Laura's been there the whole time. You know, we meet once a week, you know, and hash things out and work on ideas. And we obviously talk way more than that. I mean, the relationship that this city has with mountain trails, I can't say enough about it. And Laura is a great person to take over for Charlie. Those are huge boots to fill. And I look really forward to working with her.
Okay, we'll be talking to her tomorrow this time.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Heinrich. KPCW News Time now, 8:54. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Stuyterville Basin will soon see the return of a popular Latino market, as well as a new church with walk-up food service. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on a couple of approved projects.
The Stuyterville Basin Planning Commission approved two new Latino-owned businesses in the area. The first is Anaya's Market, which used to be located in Park City. The popular grocery store moved out of its Bonanza Drive location to make way for the Arts and Culture District. Commission Chairman Ryan Dickey says the market will be in a larger space, upgraded to nearly 29,000 square feet in two mixed-use buildings. In addition to the store, the buildings will also home a restaurant, small offices, and 10 affordable housing units.
If I lived in Silver Creek, I could shop there, stop, have some food, you have an office there. We allow multifamily residential in our community commercial, and I think aside from a sort of built-in customer base, I think it adds vibrancy to have folks walking around the project and coming in and out.
He says the project requires combining two lots, which raised concerns about the possibility of the future of the property if Anaya's was bought and converted to a big box store.
Basically, if you're within the setback requirements and all the requirements of the code, you can sort of fill up the lot, right? So everybody can imagine their favorite large big box store or maybe least favorite, and that's what could end up there if you don't restrict the size of the buildings.
The staff added a prohibition on buildings over a certain size on the lots, so a future owner couldn't buy it and put in a larger retail store. The commission also approved another multi-purpose building. The Iglesias Cristiana Luz y Verdad is a church that also has a restaurant component. Dickey says there will be outdoor tables and takeout.
I think it sounds pretty neat. I know the financials of a church can be really challenging. And if you have something like a unique little great takeaway place, and if the food's good and it engages folks with each other and with the church and the community, I think it's pretty cool.
Parking was an initial concern with the project, so the commission added conditions to restrict street parking for safety reasons. But there was another issue that was out of the commission's hands.
Unfortunately, we have very little control is around state law regarding alcohol. There was concern around the neighboring commercial owners. It's something like a 600-foot radius around church where alcohol can't be sold. And we, of course, have a store there that sells alcohol. We have Alpine distilling and property owners who would be impacted by not being able to rent or sell to tenants or owners who plan to have alcohol.
There is a variance process, which is a request to deviate from current zoning requirements. Dickey says the commission's hope is that existing businesses can take advantage of that process. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
And Park City Mountain announced their summer operating dates yesterday. The mountain's scheduled to open back up at the end of May in time for the Memorial Day holiday. KPCW's Sean Higgins has more.
Just as one season ends, another is set to begin, with PCMR scheduled to open for summer operations on May 28th. Summer favorites like the Adventure Park will return to offer activities like the mountain coaster, alpine slide, and mini golf. According to the resort, base area and on-mountain activities like lift rides and hiking will be open 7 days a week starting at 10 a.m. and will run through September 6th. Activities will then transition to Thursday through Sunday from September 9th to October 3rd. Resort COO Mike Gore said in a press release that the resort is looking forward to welcoming guests back in May and, quote, can't wait to enjoy another beautiful Park City summer. The Canyons Golf Course is also scheduled to open on May 21st. Trail access for hikers and bikers will depend on snowmelt and trail conditions in the coming weeks. The resort added that health restrictions over the summer will be in accordance with local public health guidelines. Summit County does not have a mask mandate in place, but businesses can still require face coverings and social distancing. More information about summer activities at Park City Mountain Resort can be found through a link on our website, kpcw.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Again, we've got 43 degrees now in Old Town Park City, looking for mostly sunny skies and a high of 62 today. Enjoy 70 tomorrow, 69 under partly sunny skies on Saturday with another cold front, it looks like, moving in Saturday night into Sunday. Currently 28 degrees and sunshine in the Heber Valley. 71 is the forecasted high, up to 80 tomorrow, dropping back just a bit on Saturday with a high of 78 again with a another cold front moving in Saturday night through maybe Monday morning. Stay tuned now. Coming up, we've got headline news from National Public Radio, followed by Cool Science Radio. You're listening to KPCW Park City at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County, 91.9 FM in Wasatch County. Of course, stream us live at kpcw.org. Use the KPCW app or ask your smart speaker to play KPCW Radio. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 9 o'clock, time for news.